Hi, in this episode of IB Matters, we talk to Wendy Haydorn and Susan Jesudason, who have recently revised their TOK text published by Cambridge University Press. They give a great tour of the newly revised TOK curriculum, which could serve as a refresher for anyone returning to the classroom this fall to teach the new TOK course. They also share a tour of their books, including the TOK course guide, Decoding the TOK, and the Digital Teacher Resources set, in case you want to get copies for your school. Look for lots of links to these resources in the podcast notes. Welcome to IB Matters, a podcast for those who currently teach, lead, attend, or are interested in International Baccalaureate IB schools. Hi, folks. Welcome back to IB Matters, and a special treat for those of you involved in the diploma program today. We have a couple of authors who have worked with a book from Cambridge University Press on the theory of knowledge, or known by the term, the acronym TOK, and they are from England or from the UK, and it's Wendy Haydorn and Susan Jesudason, excuse me. I practiced that like four times and still got it wrong. Jesudason. Sorry, Susan. So welcome to the podcast, the two of you. And why don't you go ahead and introduce yourselves, and then we'll get into what's going on in TOK these days.
Okay. Well, hi, I'm Susan. And I started off teaching in New Zealand as a maths and science teacher. But then I moved to the UK and started teaching religious studies and philosophies. And it was in 2004 that I did my first TOK workshop with Richard van der Lagemaert. I taught TOK and philosophy in England for about 6 years. Then I went across to India, and I was instrumental in setting up the Aga Khan Academy, which is a kindergarten to year 12 fully IB school. And I was in head of humanities in the TOK group there. And then from there I went to Armenia as the DP coordinator for the United World College Dilijan. So that's sort of my IB experiences. I retired from there end of 2016, or semi-retired, and I do a little bit of educational consultancy now.
But you could have been one of you could have been one of my trainers, because about the time you were doing your workshops, I was just learning about it back in the mid 2000s myself.
Right. Yeah. So and now I sort of help schools with a little bit of TOK things, but as I say, mostly retired.
Okay. Yeah. It's kind of like me, mostly retired.
Yes.
Wendy.
Yeah. So hello, everyone. It's lovely to be here. And I'll just tell you briefly about me. So I teach theory of knowledge at Sevenoaks School in Kent. It's an all IB school. It's co-educational. It's day and boarding. We're not far from London, about 30 minutes on the train. And I've been teaching theory of knowledge there for a number of years. I'm also director of higher education. So I'm responsible for the university applications. But I've been interested in theory of knowledge for some time, and I've got a Twitter, which is at Theory of Knowledge, and a podcast. Well, it's not really a podcast. It's more of a kind of blog, which I started, called Theory of Knowledge Student. And I began it really just to help students with their understanding of some of the concepts. So I've got that as well. But I'm really interested just to tell you a bit more about the course.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. A couple experts on the line here, and then myself, a former semi-expert, because I did, just for our listeners to know the context of my background related to TOK, is that I did teach TOK for about 8 years while I was also the diploma coordinator at my school. But my knowledge ended, basically when I walked out of the classroom 6 years ago. And so I'm really looking forward to the changes that have been going on. But for listeners who are, want to know about TOK, theory of knowledge, we have the people in the room that can keep us up to date. So for those that are not familiar with IB in general, let's just give everyone a little context of what is TOK and why is it part of the diploma program?
Well, for those of the people who are not really familiar with the IB diploma, students do 6 academic subjects, and then they do what's known as the IB core, which is made up of TOK, CAS, Creativity, Activity and Service, and the Extended Essay. Now, all of these, I'm biased, but I tend to see TOK as the jewel in the crown, mm-hmm. Because it helps to deepen students' understanding within each of their different subjects. It gives them the tools to make cross-curricular links. It helps them to see their subjects as part of a unified body of knowledge rather than discrete subjects. And again, it gives them the tools to delve more deeply into ideas that they come across in each of their subject areas. Mm-hmm. So for me, I really see it as the star of the IB diploma. Mm-hmm.
Spoken like a true TOK teacher. It has to be the core. Many people have used the metaphor of a hub of a wheel. Do you like that metaphor for TOK, that it's kind of the central hub through which
the hub of a wheel as well, because it's central, like everything spins around it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one of the things I loved about when I was teaching it is that you tried to take, as you introduced the way of thinking in each of the areas of knowledge, that like as I was a science teacher, you think about how does a science teacher ascertain truth or what is correct, and that's different from what, say, a historian might do or what an author might do regarding a piece of literature, for example.
Yeah, well, there are differences, but there are also similarities, and I think that TOK helps to tease those out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wendy, you were going to talk a little bit about some of the benefits, the aims of the TOK specifically?
Yeah, sure. I think it's important that teachers try and put themselves in the shoes of the 16, 17-year-olds that they're teaching, because taking for granted all the knowledge claims they've been told in all their subjects, it's really the opportunity they've got to reflect on what the nature of knowledge and knowing is. So the main question in TOK is, how do we know that? Mm-hmm. And I think it's a question that we appreciate as adults and as teachers, but to encourage young people to really take that question seriously and to sort of deep dive into what that might mean for them, I think it's a great course and a great opportunity to get them to think for themselves. So I think one of the main benefits is to really think about your own perspective and what you take as your own knowledge without taking it for granted, but just to look at your own beliefs and assumptions almost under the microscope, and just to think in new ways about knowledge and knowing. And of course, there's a new dimension to TOK, which is to think about the importance of ethics and values. So perhaps to think about how responsibilities and ethics are sort of built into that process of inquiry. But I think it's for everyone, just thinking about what we know, how do we know it?
Right. I think I had a question similar to that, how do we know that, your question, on my wall when in the TOK course. And I think it was when something like this. It was, what do I mean when I say I know something, and why should anyone believe me? So it kind of puts you in the space where you had to kind of defend your thinking. And when you're working with that age groups, the 16, 8 to 18-year-olds, they tend to sometimes be so self-assured that it's maybe the first time they've been asked a question what they believe. And they're also starting to separate a little bit from their own family assumptions and things. So the things that, and I'm sure you've worked with younger children as well. And when I can almost hear the parent at the dinner table speaking through that child's voice. And these children are getting their own voice. And in the true nature of IB, the agency that each child develops as they get older develops more sophistication, and TOK is a great way to get that out of kids at this point.
Sure. And I think that the IB does that so well, doesn't it? It gets learners to be reflective and critical thinkers. So I think it's not just the attributes of the learner profile, but Susan and I were thinking about the links actually between TOK along with Extended Essay and CAS, and it's quite interesting to actually do as an activity to encourage students to think about Extended Essay as an opportunity to construct knowledge in a particular area, and to think about how they might apply some TOK analysis to that Extended Essay that they're doing. So it's interesting, it's all connected, I'm sure, and the IB has always been a proper whole education in its broader sense, and I think it's something that we can recognise as adults, but getting students to really get on board with that and get excited about those things that are relevant to them to do with knowledge and knowing. I think that's the aim of what we're trying to do.
Right, right. You know, just that idea that, you know, developmentally appropriate. The IB is, you know, as if people aren't familiar with IB, they don't realize that we go beyond the high school kids. We go all the way down to pre-K. And all along the way, there are new levels of sophistication in how we're hoping students can build their knowledge and also understand the world around them. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about some of the ways that you, like, how does it work? What are some of the nuts and bolts of it? We've talked about kind of, we've used, the, I think a couple of us have used the term areas of knowledge already. What are some of the kind of connections or the ways in which we look at the subject matter, whether it be interdisciplinary or intradisciplinary?
Okay, well, I guess that's really drawing on the knowledge framework. One of the things that the new TOK guide has is a new knowledge framework. So within each area of knowledge, it's looking at the scope of that knowledge, what sort of questions fall within its scope, which fall outside. It looks at the methods and tools that different types of knowledge uses to develop and create knowledge. So when you said before about how a scientist will come up with knowledge in science is different to how a historian might. And yes, one uses the scientific method, another doesn't, but both are looking for evidence. And they have gradations of certainty, if you like. And so there are similarities in each that students can help to identify. The knowledge framework gives them an opportunity to do that. Another thing in the knowledge framework, which I think is new to this guide, is the idea of perspective. And again, when you were talking to Wendy about students finding their voice, the new core subject in the IB, in the TOK, is knowledge and the knower. And it's really focused on students being able to think about what they know, what they believe, try to analyze where those beliefs and ideas come from, and try to understand what influences their beliefs and their opinions and what they think they know. And that in turn helps them to become more aware and more aware of their presuppositions, and perhaps in time more willing to challenge those presuppositions. Mm-hmm. So this new framework really helps to build all of that in to sure. Delving deeper into the subjects. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to really put you on the spot here. So as I said, we can cut this out if you want to. But so in the light of what's going on currently here in the US, and I believe also from the news, what I'm reading about what's going on in the UK, vaccine hesitancy and knowledge of, you know, trying to make personal decisions about things like that, where people are getting their sources and how they're linking their beliefs, their friends' beliefs, and what many of us consider to be the science of what's going on. How would you approach that question or help students kind of analyze their own approach to choosing to take the vaccine or not?
You would start off, I think, by looking at who is saying what. Who are the people who are promoting the use of the vaccine? What is the science lying behind that? Who are the people who are against the vaccines? And what is the science lying behind that? If students come from a familial or cultural perspective that makes them either pro or against, you try to help them discover what leads into those preconceptions and to challenge them both ways, not just mm-hmm. for, not just against, and try to come up with what they think to be a reasonable solution. Mm-hmm. And I think that as a teacher, you have to be aware of your own presuppositions. I mean, I'm definitely a pro-vacciner. I've had my vaccine. And so I have to be careful to maintain a balance on both sides, but also to guide the students. So if you think that the science is stronger on one side, then allow them to at least to challenge that if they want to. but to be aware of where those ideas are coming from.
Yeah, well, thanks for answering that question on the spot, because it's just, you know, as we think about, I think about what was so interesting for me doing TOK as a teacher was that I could take current events oftentimes and just walk into the room with what was just on the news or what happened, you know, yesterday, because those things are, you know, they're real. And students, this will not be the last time they face these kinds of decisions. It's just that this is obviously a big one that affects society, and there are people that are strongly on both sides of this issue. So, and that is, I'm glad you mentioned the personal biases, because that's one of the things also that's challenging, I think, as a TOK teacher, is to understand that students are coming from different backgrounds. And some of the most interesting conversations I had with students were when you got into religious beliefs and identifying, you know, those beliefs and how students, you know, defend their beliefs or whether they felt they even needed to. So it's, TOK is a really interesting tool for in education of a young person. And I think it's, you know, I think that's why it's important for us to talk about it. And also what it's really one of the ways in which IB stands out from other forms of education, that it has this vehicle through which you can really explore your own understanding of the world and belief system, and idealize the future learning, so they know where they're going. We had mentioned in our notes that maybe we would talk a little bit about the connections between other elements of the core. So you mentioned at the top that TOK was one of three members of the core, the extended essay and the CAS. Do you guys want to talk a little bit about some of those connections? Because the core is intended to be a unit. In fact, it's scored as a unit when it comes to getting the diploma.
Sure. I think that it's easy for students to look at the connections with fresh eyes. And I think, for example, in TOK, they might think about the knowledge owned by different communities that they belong to. And I guess we've all got membership and identity in relation to different people and different groups. So thinking about what it means to belong to a community of knowers, thinking about how creativity, action and service might impact on people, thinking about how we might measure that impact, I think they all mesh together. And it's I think naturally students come up with those connections. But I guess the CAS element isn't assessed as such. It's just got to be completed. Whereas, of course, with TOK and extended essay, they're given a score. So they've got their, you know, 1 to 3 points in the end that contribute towards their diploma points. But recognizing the value of all of those three is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe the way it CAS is, besides completion, but within the completion is a requirement for reflection. And I believe the reflections are worded to include elements of what we talk about in TOK at the same time.
So I think TOK is very much structured in a way that helps students to learn to reflect, because reflection, I think, most students don't find it easy. In fact, a lot of teachers don't find it easy. And so TOK is an excellent way of helping students to learn to reflect on experience and therefore make the most of the experiential learning that they get in CAS. So I think that those two knit together in a really important way there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as we go back to the description of how the diploma program is put together, you have the six subject areas with this core in the middle, and it is, all of it is connected. And that's why getting a full diploma is encouraged within the diploma program, so that students are getting this complete, you know, holistic view of the world and getting an education that they can then apply in any particular way. For those that are familiar with IB, but maybe aren't keeping up with all the changes, or maybe they're a subject area teacher and don't realize how TOK has changed under their feet, what are some of the things that are different now that you guys address?
Well, I think the first one I mentioned already, so I won't go through it again, is the new core unit, which is knowledge and the knower. Then there are now five optional themes, and these are religion, Indigenous knowledge and language, and then two brand new units, one on politics and another one on technology. So that's sort of really exciting areas for students, I think. Then we have the five compulsory units, which are maths, the natural sciences, the human sciences, history, and the arts. You'll notice that ethics has no longer offered as a separate unit, but now there's a new promotion of ethics, if you like, through each of the units. So ethics has become another part of the knowledge framework, so that students will look at ethics in each of the areas of knowledge and the knowledge themes that they study. So I think that's a really important change. There's a slight change in some of the jargon. Ways of knowledge are no longer spoken about, or ways of knowing are no longer spoken about.
Okay.
There's no longer a strong distinction made between shared knowledge and personal knowledge.
Okay.
And the other big one, of course, is the internal assessment. And I think Wendy's going to talk to you a little bit about the new internal assessment.
Okay. So as you're describing those things, I have a cheat sheet in front of me here. So this knowledge framework, so what you're saying is you take the different subject areas or areas of knowledge, and you look at their framework. In other words, how that, let's just take natural sciences, since that's kind of my area. You look at the framework of what's included, or is that the scope?
Yep, so the scope is what's included in the natural sciences. You can look at sort of biology, chemistry, physics, and the multiple branches of those. Then there are areas like geology. Is that a science or is it an art? So they're questions that students might look at within the scope of the natural sciences. Then there's the methods and tools. So you look at, well, the scientific method, as it's called, but of course we know that there's not just one scientific method. And you look at what do we mean by that, and what are the different ways that science is done? And it's not all just on the experimental model that's suggested by the scientific model, by the scientific method. So we've got those sorts of issues there. Then perspectives. COVID is an excellent example of this, that there are, among the scientific community, there are lots of different perspectives on how governments should deal with it, whether they should be going for herd immunity, all groups should be vaccinated, whether some groups should not be vaccinated, whether we should have lockdowns or not. All of these things are political decisions, but they're informed by science. And, of course, the scientists are not all agreed on those. It depends what sort of mathematical modelling they use, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So they're different perspectives. And then finally, the ethics is the fourth strand of the knowledge framework. So how can we approach these questions in an ethical manner? What do we do about knowledge that is obtained unethically? Is it ethical to vaccinate, I don't know, children, pregnant women, et cetera, when we don't yet have evidence that it's safe for those?
Yeah.
So all of those kinds of questions, and you can take that same framework and you can use it across the different knowledge areas.
This idea of applying the framework to each of the different areas of knowledge, and you know, as you're talking about natural sciences, I'm thinking, okay, well, how would that work in history, for example, or how would that work in art or the arts? And so, and this is what makes TLK so interesting, is because these are things that maybe a student has got a favorite, the things that they've really gotten into. But you know, I often describe the diploma program as an opportunity to eat your educational vegetables. In other words, you need to explore things that maybe you never explored, you know, and so you need to kind of, how does that work? And then, of course, I found my experience is that kids got turned on to things that about, you know, educationally and academically that they never even thought about before because TOK put it in front of them. Assessment is always a part of an IB course, or just about always. Wendy, you want to talk a little bit about how TOK is assessed?
I think the first thing to say about assessment is that the fantastic thing is that there's no exam. So unlike with the six diploma subjects, where students will typically in a normal, you know, academic year, they'll be examined in an exam hall. The lovely thing about it is that TOK is just coursework. Mm-hmm. So the essay is largely similar compared with the old course. 1,600 words maximum on a prescribed title. Titles come out in September. Students choose a list of six titles and then write their essay. But the exciting and new part is, of course, the wonderful TOK exhibition that I'm a really big fan of. Mm-hmm. I love the presentation in the past. I really enjoyed watching students present on a TOK question. And I was actually a bit sad to see it go. But I must say, a year in having taught this, the exhibition has just, it's a game changer for students. And I've really enjoyed teaching it. So I'm really happy to, talk a bit more about the exhibition.
Yeah, before we talk about the exhibition, let's go back to the prescribed titles. That's such an odd term for a lot of lay people who are not involved with IB. So prescribed title, if I could say it, if this is correct still, is essentially an open-ended question that forces students to kind of think deeply about something, nothing necessarily specific to what they've already studied, but the skill set that they've acquired in TOK should allow them to approach this, what's called prescribed title or open-ended statement or question. Is that a fair description, or maybe you have a better way of describing what those prompts are that they are writing about in the essay?
So the essay titles tend to be characterized by an open-ended question, usually comparing two areas of knowledge.
Got it.
And the students need to construct an argument and do some really good evaluation and analysis in that context. But because it's coursework, there's time for them to think about the titles, choose the one that fits them best. Mm-hmm. They can draft it. And then they can redraft it. I'm really happy to give you some examples of titles if that would help.
Please,
I just have to pull them up.
They're fun because I would, like, whenever I was asked to talk in front of the school board about what IB was, I often brought the prescribed titles with me because the school board members were just amazed that 17, 18-year-olds were answering these questions because they're just like, oh my goodness, that's sophisticated.
So let me just give you an example of a prescribed title. So this is from the session that's just finished in May. Here's the first question. Accepting knowledge claims always involves an element of trust. Discuss this claim with reference to two areas of knowledge. So that's a good example of a typical essay question. Mm-hmm. Another one that was really popular was this one. It was number six this year from May 2021. Avoiding bias seems like a commendable goal, but this fails to recognise the positive role that bias can play in the pursuit of knowledge. Discuss this statement with reference to two areas of knowledge. And that was such an interesting one for students to engage with, because the assumption that bias is inherently negative is something that they really needed to address and think about in a new way. So to almost flip the concept of bias and think about occasions when and how bias might be a good thing in relation to the pursuit of knowledge in their own studies. So they're really tough questions, and I invite teachers to have a go at coming up with thesis statements for each of them.
Yeah.
I think to help students navigate the process of, first of all, selecting the one question out of the six that is going to play their strong hand, where they can actually write a good essay, and to come up with an argument, some sort of coherent argument where they can put together a structured argument that is supported and showcases their TOK analysis skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and 1,600 words may sound a lot to some people, but it's very short in comparison to what has to be accomplished. What has to be accomplished in that essay? Yeah, and so just also for those that aren't familiar with it so much, this is, you know, there certainly are some the skill set, and in encouraging students to help build their essay correctly is something they can get support on. But much of this is done on their own. The teacher has a very relatively small role in executing the final essay. And it's not like, say, a expository essay that you might do in an English class where the teacher is seeing all your drafts and redlining things. This is much more independent work. Is that correct?
Yeah. So they can only get one set of holistic feedback on one draft. And obviously they are encouraged to, you know, plan, prepare, think about relevant examples. But yeah, it's for them to construct their argument, and it really has to be their own work.
Mm-hmm. One thing I know we always did was we would look at past essays, because IB makes those available, and you can see how students approached questions from previous years to see kind of how they approach each aspect of the prompt, and also understanding what they mean when they say use two different areas of knowledge and how they might be intertwined in answering a question. Yeah, I love those two examples you gave, and thanks for sharing those. So let's get to it. You said your favorite's the exhibition, so let's hear about it. What's involved in doing the exhibition?
So the exhibition is really an opportunity for students to think about how TOK is relevant to the world around them. So thinking about, first of all, they have to choose a prompt. There are 35 so-called IA prompts that they can select. And then if you are familiar with that series that was called The History of the World in 100 Objects, you'll know and understand the power of objects to connect with ideas. So having chosen their question, they then have to think of three specific objects. Each of them has to have a real-world context for them. They need to describe the object, explain its context, and then write a justification to explain and show how that object relates to the chosen prompt, to say why they've included it in the exhibition. So what that means is they have to think about the real-world connection with these TOK ideas.
So are the objects physical? I mean, are they like a vase or a piece of art, or can it be technical?
So they have to be quite specific rather than general. So say, for example, if we come back to what we were discussing earlier with the vaccine hesitancy, they could use a news article or a tweet with a thread where that's being discussed, and they could link it to one of the questions. So one question that could be relevant there could be something like, on what grounds might we doubt a claim? Or what counts as good evidence for a claim? So the exhibition really gives them this gold dust opportunity to think about how those controversial things where there are different multiple answers actually connect to an idea, and then they can write about it. And that's obviously a crucial thing as well, to articulate in their own words why that object is relevant. I think teachers will probably find these questions become more familiar in the 7-year cycle of this syllabus. But I think some of the questions that are there are so worthy of deep discussion. How can we judge when evidence is adequate? What makes a good explanation? These are all great questions. And I think the good thing about the exhibition is that they are pre-prepared. Those 35 questions are there. They're good for the next 7 years. And it means that the students themselves don't have to construct them.
Okay. Yeah, so that's good. I'm glad you clarified that point, because I was wondering, when you said there are that many questions, do they have another fresh set every year? So the teacher gets a little bit familiar with them too, because they'll be repeated from year to year. If they have more than one section, I'm sure they get. So can students in the same section use the same question as long as there's different objects?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And when you said that the book or the history of the world and 100 objects, there aren't a set 100 objects. There's the world is open to you as far as choosing an object. Is that correct?
So that was Neil McGregor, who was the director of the British Museum before the current incumbent. And he's BBC series. If you just Google BBC History of the World and 100 Objects, you'll see that those 100 objects were explored and analysed. Okay. But I think linking objects to knowledge is fascinating, because I think it invites you really to think about objects that sort of lend themselves to analysis. So an object, like you said, you asked about what would count as an object. It has to be something with a real world context. So they want it to be specific. They want it to be relevant to students. It could include an object, could be a student's extended essay.
Oh, okay.
Or it could be their CAS project.
Okay. Yeah. So it is wide open, as long as they can find a way to connect it to the question.
Yeah.
All right. So that gives us a really, to me, I think it's a pretty good update on what's going on in TOK. And I'm sold. We should all take TOK. So you guys were introduced to me because you are the authors of a book that you have just done a revision on. Is that correct? With Cambridge University Press?
Yeah, there are actually two books that we wrote. One of them is a revision of a book we wrote 7 years ago.
Okay.
And the other one is the course guide, which is a rewrite of a book that Richard van der Lagemaert wrote about 7 years ago.
Why don't you tell us, walk us through a little bit about your book, how it's kind of structured. What's the title? What are the titles of the two books? And by the way, we'll be putting links to all of this in our podcast notes so people can go straight there to get more information.
The first book is The Course Guide, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. And then Decoding TOK is the second book. And there's also a teacher's resource, so Wendy will tell you about those. The Course Guide, very briefly, is a comprehensive guide to knowledge across the different knowledge themes and areas of knowledge. It's broken down very simply into the core theme, knowledge and the knower, the optional themes, the compulsory themes, and then the assessment. And it's aimed at giving a comprehensive guide, but to an international audience. So keywords are explained for students whose first language may not be English, for example. Mm-hmm. Every chapter begins with a set of quotations and questions to help students to think about their prior knowledge in those areas and to try to help them reflect on their beliefs and their presuppositions, so that they're already in the framework to start exploring that particular area of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And each chapter, of course, has lots of activities and discussion questions, again, all structured and at helping students develop the TOK language and the ability to explore the questions that come with TOK, the knowledge questions. So maybe Wendy wants to take you through the decoding book, which is slightly different.
So the nice thing about the decoding book is that it's very short. It's only 250-odd pages. So when we originally wrote it, the first version was really just to try and give students a very clear sense of what this course was about, to make really clear, to decode what the course is. And then in the second edition that we've produced, we've got various features that I think have improved it further. So each chapter begins with learning intentions, which is quite useful to set out what students should understand once they've completed that chapter. We've got other activities like before you start. That's one feature. Other things you'd expect, like key points, keywords, top tips. And then the one that connects it so nicely with the new core theme is this feature called TOK in Your Life. And those boxes contain examples and prompts just to help students find real life examples that relate to them, because that's the whole point of the course. It's not about an abstract history of philosophy. It is really about them engaging with what they know and how they know it. So we hope that these books really do that, and they should clarify the course to students, hopefully in a way that's really clear and obvious. Mm-hmm.
Do you have connections to do you have chapters on different subject areas and the relation to TOK, or is it set up entirely through the TOK lens? I guess that's the same thing, I guess. But I know I used a textbook when I was a TOK book when I was teaching, and it was helpful to me to have sections on how the subject's connected to TOK. Is that anything that you guys have going on?
Each area discusses the different subjects within, and at the end of each area of knowledge, there are linking questions which link that particular subject to other subjects that the students might do.
The structure in both books is identical in that both of them have got four areas. They've got a section on knowledge in the knower, then they've got the optional themes, then they've got the areas of knowledge, and then the assessment. So it's easy to use both books as well. The course guide is better for a sort of deeper dive, more depth. Decoding is a bit, it's got a bit more of a focus on skills. Mm-hmm. And the skills of analysis that will be required to succeed in the assessed task. So they're slightly different but complementary.
Okay. Yeah. So then you mentioned that you also have a section on assessment. So does that help you kind of guide the students through the process of the two types of assessment, the essay and then the exhibition?
That's right. So both books cover the essay and the exhibition. And it's probably worth also mentioning that the essay is worth two-thirds of the marks.
Right.
And the exhibition is worth one-third. So the weighting is worth knowing about. But the teacher book, I would say, is fantastic. So our colleague Thomas Duckling, who teaches in Switzerland, he's written a brilliant resource called Theory of Knowledge for the IB Diploma, and it's the digital teacher's resources that he's produced. And I've used his worksheets and his notes that go with them, and they are brilliant for any teacher who just wants to see the new ideas, or new teachers who are perhaps looking for resources that they can trust. So I'd say whether you are new to this or whether you're, you know, experienced and you know what you're doing, his worksheets, I think, are invaluable. So I'd really give a strong shout out for Thomas Duckling's teacher resource.
Thank you, Thomas.
But it's all part of the same package of CUP resources that the offering there.
Yeah. So you mentioned the term digital in regards to Thomas's part of the book. Is that, are the other ones available in print only, or do they have a digital component?
I'm pretty sure that with the course guide and Decoding TOK, you can either buy just the physical book, or there is a physical book that gives you a code at the front where you just scratch the panel to reveal the electronic code, and then that gives you the electronic book. So I think there are two possibilities. There's just the physical book, or the physical book combined with the electronic resource.
Right. And that's becoming a more common practice too, is that once you have purchased the book, then you have access to it. And that way the students aren't lugging the book back and forth, or, you know, if you have just so many copies, you can use it in that way. So tell us a little bit about, you've given us kind of a tour of the book and so on. One question that I was, ran into, it was kind of funny. I went to several, I loved being trained in TOK. I was like an addict for TOK training. I probably went to two or three additional TOK trainings because I was the coordinator, I kept sending myself. But, and then whenever I was at an IB Americas global conference, I would always attend the TOK workshops and things that were going on there. And one of the things that I would run into is I'd run into kind of a almost a snobbishness among some TOK teachers or trainers, saying, oh, you never use a book. You have to deal with just current events. And here I was at home with my book and loving it. And then, hanging the current events on it. But tell me, since you're authors, why do you feel it's worthwhile to have a textbook or a book in the room to go with, obviously, the connection to current events?
Okay, I'm going to make a confession here, and that I have never used a textbook in my classroom, but I make sure that the library has plenty of them. I used to use them for ideas, because often when you're teaching, you don't have a lot of prep time, and suddenly thinking about, oh, what am I going to do for this? It's a great idea. I also use it to refer students to. So if they're unclear or they want to look further into something, then I can direct them to the books. I find that students often enjoy going through and coming up with ideas in them that they then bring into class and want to discuss further. Mm-hmm. So I find them incredibly useful, but I don't bring them to class and say, okay, class, opened up to page 178, and today we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. I think that textbooks need to be used in a way that's flexible and can respond to whatever it is students bring into class, whether it's from current affairs or something that happened in their life that they want to discuss. And the book can be a useful support in that, rather than just sitting down and using it as a, this week we're going to do this chapter, right, and next week we're going to do the next one.
Right, it's how you use it. Yeah, that sounds good. That was my defense of using a book, that it wasn't, chapter by chapter by chapter, like I might have done my physics book. I did not do that with TOK. Yeah, and I found it really helpful for myself, especially when we got to the assessment part, that it had all the rules right in it. And so if the students, you know, obviously they have online access to things like that, but with the textbook in front of them, if they're sitting at home or they're working with some friends on, you know, how to do the essay or seeing examples of things like that, the textbook was a great reference, you know, and physically having it in front of them to be able to say, oh, okay, this is how this was done, or this is what rule I need to follow to be able to do a good essay.
Can I just add something as well? I think, again, thinking about it from the student point of view, if we begin a lesson with something like who owns knowledge, that is question 29 of the exhibition, that's a lovely starter if you've got two or three examples to hand that might help them unpack that. But these are big questions, and it's quite easy, I think, for students to find time to get comfortable and confident with it. And actually anything that makes the lesson really engaging and concrete for them, that will help them build their confidence. So, you know, as a rule of thumb in a lesson, thinking about the variety of activities that you're going to do, having a worksheet is no bad thing if that's appropriate, but also them just being able to sort of go away, read up, possibly consolidate or read a chapter and then come and discuss it in the following lesson. So to kind of front load lessons where they've looked at some material, that's a good idea. So I would say that actually reading in TOK is quite important. And I think it's quite important to develop that habit of reading to get them to think deeply and reflect, rather than it just being sort of endless discussion and open-ended questions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's quite a bit of front loading of how to even have these kind of discussions in TOK, because often students aren't exposed to this way of thinking about knowledge, and without some skills, the discussions don't go anywhere. You really need the kids to kind of catch on to where you're going with the whole way TOK is framed. And that's really part of the beauty of the IB diploma program, is that this development of the students' way of thinking about things is built in, and TOK is the biggest tool in developing that skill in students at that age. Do you want to? Do you guys want to each maybe take a stab at kind of wrapping up? What are your final thoughts, or what was your, you know, any tips or advice for other teachers of TOK?
One of the things that I used, as a TOK coordinator and as an IB coordinator, I used to try to have all teachers, whether they were TOK teachers or not, engaged in TOK, and we used to run workshops for them, because I firmly believe that every lesson should be a TOK lesson, whether you're teaching TOK or not. And I think that the skills and the fun of learning really come through in TOK. And so if all teachers can incorporate some TOK into their lessons, I think that can really help to ignite student learning in a way that is not often seen in classrooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a good point too, Susan, that in fact, that's the intention of IB and how it's connected, is that subject area teachers are actually supposed to incorporate TOK. It's one of the key things I do. You know, I did site visits with schools as an IBEN member, IB Educator Network member. And one of the things you always ask subject area teachers is how they connected their course to TOK. And that's part of the deal. You need to do that. Yeah. Anything to summarize from you, Wendy?
I would look out for the TOK subject report, which is published every year. That's a really good source of information just to get updates, connect with examiners and just general thoughts on the course. I would go to the TOK subject report. I know that CUP have also got a teacher panel. They'd love to hear from you if you want to join that TOK teaching community. And I would say, I've got a blog as well. If anybody wants to write a guest post blog on theoryofknowledgestudent.com, they'd be very welcome if they want to get in touch. I think staying interested in keeping every lesson dynamic, and as a rule of thumb, something to read, something to write, a discussion and an activity, that's not a bad thing to go with in the first instance. But I think whatever your level of experience, whether you're beginning or whether you're established in this and looking for new material, I just encourage you just to you know, carry on and keep interested in it, because it's such a great course. And I think, I hope we've shown that the changes to the course are really, really worth going for.
Yeah, I'm sold on it. And now I'm going to sound like I know what I'm talking about when I go to the TOK roundtable here in Minnesota. So I'll encourage people to use that this way as well. So one of the things that's great about the about doing these kinds of podcasts, or the one reason I was set about to do these podcasts, was to really create a repository of information that people could look at their leisure at any time, rather than have someone come in and do a workshop for you. Essentially, and as I listen to you talk, you've created a workshop for us that anyone can listen to. So I'll be encouraging those that are listening, if they want to share this information with other people in their staff, please share this and, you know, use it as a workshop. I've had a few people tell me that the one way they use the podcast is actually, you know, during lunch break, they say, or go take a 45 minute break and take a walk. And we'll come back after you've had some coffee and a walk and listen to this on your phone, on your walk. So, there's lots of ways to use this. And really, you know, listening to you, I've learned a lot. And I think what you're telling us about, at least till the next revision, this is going to be really good information for years to come for TOK teachers and leaders. So I appreciate your time today. And I know that we've got lots of links, including links to the book and how to buy it, and also just more links about IB TOK in general. So I hope that folks will take advantage of those. I want to thank both of you for your time today, Wendy and Susan.
Thank you, John.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
It's been a great experience. Thank you very much.
That's great. You can learn much more about TOK and other aspects of the Cambridge University Press resources using links in our podcast notes. For those in the U.S., don't forget about that discount code, which is POD25, P-O-D-25, for your first order with them. Now that we have over 75 IB Matters episodes covering a range of subjects, you can use our podcast webpage, which is organized by program and by topic. The link to the website is in our podcast notes. We've also added a dedicated Facebook page for the podcast called IB Matters Podcast. Besides linking our recent podcasts, it'll have additional features highlighting our guests and further links from our podcasts. We encourage you to like and follow our Facebook page and make suggestions for further programs or questions you would like us to ask our upcoming guests. Please find all of our episodes wherever you get your podcasts and click subscribe so you don't miss any future programs. Join our over 2,600 followers on Twitter at MattersIB. Also help us spread the word about IB by liking, sharing, and reviewing the IB Matters links in your own feeds and social networks. In just 2 years, we've been heard in over 150 countries, a testament to the global reach of the IB.